Hello, everybody. My name is Charlotte Ray. I have written a book with my son, Larry Strauss, called The Facts of My Life, and I hope you'll go out and buy it and read it and enjoy it. And I'm going to be interviewed by Rabbi Saul Solomon on Days Gone By. Thank you. Oh, and yes, one more thing. Happy gobble gobble.
Girls, 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 gather round the radios, ladies and gentlemen. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, and I am so excited and so delighted to be talking to a delightful actress, a woman who's been on television, she's been in the movies, she has been on Broadway. She's a two-time Tony nominee. She has also won an Emmy Award for the show she is perhaps most famous for, The Facts of Life. Well, the fact of the matter is, on the telephone, we have the wonderful, the delightful Charlotte Ray, the author of her new autobiography, The Facts of My Life. And oh, in my life, I am delighted to welcome her to the neighborhood. Shalom, Charlotte.
Shalom, shalom, Rabbi. Shalom.
Oh, delightful to talk to you. So what made you at this stage of your life? You're 89 years old. Oh, and with many more years to come, I hope. But now suddenly you sit down and say, oh, I'm going to tell my story.
Well, my son, Larry Strauss, said to me a couple of years ago, Ma, you're 87 and a half. It's time we did your memoirs. And I don't know how to write, but he's a writer. He's a teacher, and he's a writer, and he's written many beautiful books. So we did it together, and I decided to let it all hang out. I'm very honest about my life and all the miracles in my life and all the wonderful things and all the pain. And like everybody else, life is life. And it's wonderful and it's challenging, and I let it all hang out. I think people will be able to identify with me.
But was it strange collaborating with your own flesh and blood and having then to sift through? Oh, you know, my husband, he told me this after 25 years, and dredging that up, not just with a stranger, not with a ghostwriter, but your own son.
Yes, it was a very rich, wonderful experience. It really was, if you know what I mean. It really was. It was important for both of us. Yes, it was.
Was there something in the writing of the autobiography? Obviously, you've had these big events in your life, but were there things that you had completely forgotten for 30, 40, 50 years, and in the writing and the going over and the thinking about your life, you suddenly remembered and said, oh, I have to tell that story?
Well, yeah, I remembered a lot of the stuff that I didn't remember because, you know, I'm getting on there and I can't remember everything. But, yeah, it was...
Well, what's an example of a story that you hadn't thought about in decades and it suddenly popped into your mind when you started sifting through?
Well, no, it was just that if you've read some of the book, my firstborn, Andy, who died some years ago at the age of almost 45, was diagnosed autistic. He had autism. And he also had some other handicaps. And
well, he had epilepsy, too, or something like that, right?
Epilepsy and childhood schizophrenia. And it was challenging. And also retardation. And he was sweet and wonderful. And then he was always doing things that were unexplainable today. With the children with autism, they at least have services for them and everything. In those days, it was a big mystery. My doctor for Andy didn't know anything about it. I mean, it was way back there, you know. And it was challenging, and we loved him very much. But it was a very challenging time, and my other son was very wonderful with him. Wonderful. He's 3 years younger and always was a beautiful big brother to his big brother. if you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely. Although, were you and Larry ever afraid of him since he was diagnosed as potentially violent?
Well, yes. At one point, it was a little frightening for me because I'm a very short little lady, and he turned out to be 6 foot.
Wow. Okay.
So it was a little challenging, and I always, after that, had to have somebody with me so I wasn't alone with him, although I loved him. So.
Oh, absolutely. And then towards the end, I mean, it wasn't that he killed himself or did anything like that. He put on a lot of weight and had a heart attack. What happened with that when he was in his 40s?
Yes. I mean, we tried to get him to exercise, and so one of the medications gave him a voracious appetite, and they said it was going to calm him down, but I didn't see any improvement. But listen, it's all under the bridge now.
Of course. Well, and again, as you said, if they had had the diagnoses then that we have now, they would have treated things differently, you would have done different stuff. Who knows? But then again, you can't know in this world. And thank God your other son is fine and well and helping you write this autobiography, The Facts of My Life, which is available from Bear Manor Media. That is the publisher there, and you can buy it in all the usual places. So, before we get to the other big, shocking revelation in the book, what are some happier memories in the book of your professional or your personal life?
Well, I just loved my family, and I loved my work. I had wonderful times with the different people I worked with, like Larry Hagman, you know, who played J.R. in... what was the name of that?
Dallas.
Oh, he was a darling young guy.
Huh.
His wife and their two little kids. He was a jolly good guy, and we had so much fun out of town before we opened in New York. And
in which play? In which musical?
It was a straight play by S.J. Perelman, who wrote all those things for the Marx Brothers, The Day is the Races, and Horse Feathers, and it was a play starring Bert Lahr. Remember him from The Cowardly Lion and The
course.
Wizard of Oz? He was the Cowardly Lion. Bert.
So wait, were you in Foxy? Was that the musical or no?
No, he was in that, but I wasn't. No, this was called The Beauty Part. It was not a musical.
Ah.
But he did Foxy after The Beauty Part.
Okay, but you were in The Beauty Part. I didn't remember that. So what was, I read the biography by John Lahr, speaking of children writing about their parents, about Bert Lahr, and that he was obviously beloved on stage, but he could be very reticent and difficult off stage. What was your experience with Bert Lahr?
Well, all I can say is he was darling, but he was always worried, always worrisome. And I'll never forget how I couldn't get over how he was not even aware. He told his daughter that she could get her nose fixed. It would make it wouldn't bother him. It would make him happy. Well, she had no intention of changing her nose. She liked her nose. She said, "Daddy, my nose is resemblance of your nose, and I love you, and I love my nose." But he never got it. He was never moved by that. He didn't get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He never got it.
Difficult man, but I'm glad that at least you had a good relationship with him when you were doing the show.
Oh, yes. It was fine. You'll read the book and you'll find out something funny that happened with him and me.
Oh, okay. That's a little teaser for people to buy the book. What about young Paul Lynn, whom we all know from Hollywood Squares and from Bye Bye Birdie? What were your... because you were almost classmates there, right?
Yes, we were freshmen together, and we started to play opposite each other in the musicals at Northwestern University. And he wrote brilliant sketches, and we were a team, you know, on campus. Everyone knew us as Lebotsky and Lynn.
Well, your maiden name, your not your maiden name, your original name was Lobotsky.
Yes.
Nice Jewish name, which your agent asked you to change, I guess.
Yes, yes. When I was at Northwestern, I was doing some radio work in downtown in Chicago, and they said, oh, you can't use the name of Lobotsky. I said, why not? They said, no, it wouldn't work. They said, what's your middle name? I said, Ray. They said, oh, there, that's it, Charlotte Ray. And that's the way it's been ever since.
Well, I mean, it wasn't the wrong advice, obviously, because it's done you, the name has done you very well. But if you were coming up, let's say, as a young actress now, or the last 20 years, would you have changed or would you have kept Lobotsky?
I don't think, you know what, I would have kept it if it were a name like Kolachensky. I'm not ashamed of my name.
No.
My daddy was so hurt that I changed my name. He said, it's a good name. We're very respected in Milwaukee. He said, I don't understand why you did that. But, I mean, I felt terrible because Lobotsky sounds like Lobotsky. But Kolachensky sounds good. You know, it's the sound. I would have kept it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's a certain Lobotsky bat that it doesn't have a flow. It doesn't sound noble, with all due respect. It doesn't have that nobility to it or something like that.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm proud of it.
Oh, sure. Oh,
but he was a very well-loved man in Milwaukee, yeah.
Oh, and by the way, before we get back to Paul Lynde, did your mom ever tell you any stories about knowing Golda Meir when she was a kid?
Well, yeah, they were in school together. Yeah, they in Milwaukee, you know. And my mother was a very proud member of the Jewish National Fund. She used to go around with a little box, getting money for Israel and everything. Golda Meir was a fantastic premier of Israel.
Of course. Oh, great! But when your mom knew her, she was just a little girl or a young girl in Milwaukee too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But did she share any particular memories of her friendship with Golda?
No, not really.
Oh, okay. Tell us more about your friendship, though, and your colleagueship in college with Paul Lynde.
Well, we did these sketches together, and they were wonderful fun. And then we did Twelfth Night. He was Sir Toby Belch, and I was Mariah. And Patricia Neal was Olivia, in the play, in the drama department.
Wow.
And Paul Lynde went on to New York, and I went on to New York. And he was in Bye Bye Birdie, and I went into a lot of musicals, Three Wishes for Jamie, and so on and so on. And Little Abner, I was Mammy Yoakum, the original Mammy Yoakum and Little Abner. And, you know, doing television and theater off-Broadway and on-Broadway, and got married and had two beautiful little boys. My husband was a composer, and he wrote the theme music for Car 54, Where Are You?
Which you were in, of course, yes.
Yes, yes, and we had a good life. It was hard, struggling and everything, like everybody else. And then
But did you have a clue, even an inkling, that perhaps your husband was, shall we say, starting to play for the other team?
No, I did not. And we had so much in common. We loved the theater, we loved music, and it was a time when everyone kept things under blankets like it was a shame. And I am so grateful to Obama, President Obama, for today making it so that they can all hold their heads up high and not feel and get equal opportunities and get married and everything. It's just remarkable. But it was very devastating for me. I mean, it really, really laid me low for a long time. It was the mourning of a M-O-U-R-N-I-N-A.
Of course.
Of a long 25-year relationship. And but when I got over it and accepted it, I realized that it must have been awfully tough on him. And we continued to be friends. And I never did anything that was not supportive of him. And
Because you feel, I guess, especially back then when it was happening, that somehow you had failed or failed as a woman or a wife, not realizing that it's really more about him and what he was feeling and going through. But what I wonder is, if you were married for that many years and you had so much in common, why was it such a devastating thing if he was either bisexual or gay? Why not just let him do what he had to do and then come home at night and have dinner?
Oh, I couldn't have an open marriage. But I mean, I didn't know. He wanted an open marriage when he told me.
Well, yeah. Well.
But I felt that wouldn't be appropriate. And we remained friends until he died. And I got to know his partner. And
well, it happens, you know. And since then, although you have not remarried, you have, as you have said, you've had your flings. I think you said that.
Oh, yes.
Anybody famous? Anybody we know?
I wouldn't tell you.
Oh, come on. It's just a fling. It's just a thing. It's a memoir. Or are you saving that for the sequel?
Well, I don't want to do that in my memoir. No. My memoir is about other things than that.
Well, sure. I mean, it is, of course. But it's also about a lot sadder things. I mean, at least the fling thing is fun. That's fun. You're dating. It isn't about, you know, what happened with the son and the marriage, and then all your, thank God you're cancer-free, but you've also had your medical issues.
Yeah. And then don't forget, my alcoholism, remember?
Oh, how could I forget your alcoholism? Thank you for bringing that up. How long have you been there? So how many days, hours, weeks, months?
Sober for 41 years.
Mit Mazel. I mean, what was the turning point? What made you say, oh, I gotta stop this?
Well, I was going through all this thing with Andy, my older son. It was very hard to find a place for him to go to school or do anything, and I was constantly trying to find some sort of therapy for him and everything, and so alcohol was my drug of choice, so I could go to sleep at night. And then when we finally got him placed in a good place, at one time before we lost it, I didn't know why I was still drinking, and so I mentioned it to a friend, and she said, "Oh, you poor darling, why don't you go to AA?" And I said, "AA? Oh no, I'm not an alcoholic. I just have a little drinking problem." He said, "Well, just go. They're very warm and wonderful, and maybe you might feel comfortable." And I went, and I did, and I was doing, at that time, you know, I was Molly the mailman on Sesame Street.
Right.
And, you know, I had to get up every morning with the beautiful, bright children, and Oscar the Grouch and Big Bird, and I was just hungover, but doing okay. And so after we had the wrap for that season, I had called and found a meeting nearby in New York, 81st and Lexington, in a church. Went in and felt absolutely so comfortable and welcomed. And I've been going ever since, and I love it. I love it, and I go to a lot of ladies' meetings, and we just have such a beautiful time. It's beautiful people, believe me, and it's a spiritual program, just like Judaism. It's a spiritual program.
Well, speaking of Judaism also, how, obviously you were raised pretty religious, you weren't Orthodox, but you did, your family went to an Orthodox shul where everything was divided. How much is Judaism a part of your current life over the past couple of decades, or currently?
Well, I don't know. I just love the whole traditions and the philosophy. It's very much like AA. And I always celebrate with my kids and family, Hanukkah, and we celebrate Passover and
good.
Yom Kippur and all that. And I'm not seriously involved very much other than that. I mean, you know, some people go every day, some people go just high holiday.
Right.
But I do observe, and I love being part of the Jewish faith, and but I'm not very, very, you know, but I love, you know what I mean.
No, that's totally, I mean, and it's wonderful to hear that you are still connected and such. And we are connecting, by the way, with the delightful Charlotte Ray. Are you 89 now or 90, by the way?
I'm 89 and a half. By the grace of God, one day at a time.
Absolutely. And especially, I mean, God's grace, as we were mentioning, you got over pancreatic cancer, for God's sakes. I mean, in not that many years ago, and you have been cancer-free. So, but you speak out and you talk to people about having it, right?
Oh, yes. I want them to get checkups every year. They should get a checkup to be sure that there's no trace of anything in their pancreas, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And also, not only that, but you've got a whole second fake ticker in your heart.
That's right. I mean, when I was doing the Facts of Life, on the, I think it was the Labor Day weekend, they put in a pacemaker for me because I had a condition where it would either go too fast or too slow, and this kept everything even. And then recently, and I had also a mitral valve put in. And then now I have a new pacemaker. It's going to outlive me, I think.
Well, and which is going to be difficult because you're going to live to 120. So, you know, it's got some work to do. What's kind of funny in your book is that you are kind of friends with someone who has been on this radio program, Robbie Benson, and he warned you against a certain kind of the valve or the thing of using an animal valve.
Yeah.
What was that?
I guess a cow valve. I think that's what it was. He said, don't get it. He said, it didn't work for me, and I got a mitral valve, you know, a mechanical valve. And so I took his advice and didn't get the other valve.
You didn't get the cow. You went for the robot, which makes a lot of sense.
Even though the surgeon said, if you were my mother, I would advise you to get the cow thing or whatever it is.
Yeah, but you don't know how he liked his mother.
Yeah. No, but Robbie, I listened to what he said, and I've been very happy with my mitral valve. Very, very happy. Of course, you know, I have to be checked when I go into the airport because I have all this stuff in me, but that's okay. That's no problem.
Yeah, I don't think they think you're a terrorist. Trust me. I think they wave a thing and they go, you let her through.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, let me do some more Broadway and theater-related questions, because I do love that as much as anything. Do you have any memories of appearing in that original, not the German original, but the off-Broadway original three-penny opera with people like Lottie Lenya and John Astin and B. Arthur? Any memories?
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. I was just in it 2 weeks because then I had another commitment. I mean, I did the Eric Bentley version at Northwestern University. The same music, Kurt Weill, but the book was, and the lyrics were by Eric Bentley. And then, when I came to New York, this friend of mine was going to play Mr. Peachum. He said, in Three Penny Opera, I said, my God, I love Three Penny Opera. He said, well, I don't think it's all cast. So I went, I said, well, I'm doing another show. I could only be in it a couple of weeks. I have a commitment to another show. But I went anyway, and they said, we want you, and if you leave the show after 2 weeks, would you commit to the album, for the show?
Right.
And I said, yes. And so I was in it in 2 weeks, and then, oh, I don't know how much longer, we did the recording, and it's incredible. Have you got it?
Yes, and we're going to play something from it to hear you and the cast of that Three Penny Opera, which is still probably the best version. They've done a couple of them on Broadway, and they were terrible.
I agree, they were terrible.
Oh, you went to, did you see that one that Wallace Shawn wrote, that he did that last adaptation? It was, I mean, as much as I love Alan Cumming and Cyndi Lauper, it was awful. Anywho, and it's just my personal opinion. But, you were in also Lil Abner, another hit on Broadway. Any memories of Michael Kidd as a choreographer? Did you do much dancing there?
To audition for that, I had to do a cartwheel. Well, I did it, and I really didn't want to do a cartoon character. I really went out and auditioned, but I really didn't want it. I wanted to stay at home and be with the kids, and I didn't want to do it. I didn't really want to do it at all. But my lawyer, who was negotiating, said, well, Charlotte, I said, well, I know I can get out of it. Why don't you ask for $750 a week? And then they won't pay that for that little part. And what do you know?
They paid it, and then you were in another hit. But let me ask you also about I'm always fascinated by this, when you're working intently inside a musical before it opens, and your hopes are high, and you're just working yourselves to exhaustion, but you don't know, really, whether you've got a hit or a flop or something in the middle. So you're in Lil Abner, that turns out into a hit, but then you go into a show called Pickwick, which you figure, oh, Leslie Bricus is involved. Did you know that wouldn't be another Lil Abner?
No, we thought that it was definitely going to be. It was a wonderful show, especially for the family and children. It was lovely. We toured with it. It was, how can I put it? David Merrick was the producer.
Ah, yes.
And we played all these large houses in San Francisco, L.A., Detroit, Cleveland, Washington, D.C., all these big houses. And they made their money back. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, yeah. So you thought...
Before we even opened. And so the reviews were tepid. Mm. They were not blockbusters. And so they closed it. And that was so disappointing to all of us, because we'd worked so hard. It was the producer's choice.
Yeah. Well, sure. Do you think it's a show that deserves another chance, like the York Theater, or somebody should revive it? Or is it best, it was okay, but in retrospect, there's a reason that the critics weren't crazy about it?
Well, it had some production values that were so charming, but they wouldn't be able to do it again. There was a little skating rink.
Oh, my God.
And stuff like that. No, that's the end of it. But I loved working with all the British people. They were all very... Harry Secombe was lovely. Beautiful man, beautiful. And he said something very interesting I'd like to pass on. It's in my book.
Oh, please.
He's from Wales. And his father said to him, Harry, you're very famous now, and you have a lot of people around you who love you. You know how you can tell the truth about the characters that are around you, your friends? See how they handle the bootblack and the newsboy and the people who serve. If they treat them well, then I think they're good. But if they treat them offhanded way, you know who they really are.
Nice. Very true. I mean, if you think about it, it's how you treat the people who aren't at the top, you know?
Mm-hmm. See how they do them, and then you'll know who they really are.
Well, we're finding out who Charlotte Ray really is from talking to her, and of course from everybody going out and buying her book, The Facts of My Life, available from Bear Manor Media. Can I ask, you had what every actor, well, what most actors dream of, a big hit TV show, The Facts of Life. There you are. And yet you choose, after a couple of years, to leave. And your good friend Cloris Leachman takes over. Why do you leave a show?
Well, you know, I didn't want them to sprinkle money on my grave. I felt that what happened was the writers, who were wonderful, started writing things with the girls and leaving Mrs. Garrett out. I mean, I ended up doing things like, okay, girls, it's time to have dinner. Let's go and have dinner. Or it's time to go to bed. I mean, I didn't have any real issues to handle or any kind of...
So you were being marginalized, in a sense, because they were concentrating on the girls.
Yeah, and I didn't take it personally. I just felt that maybe this is God telling me to move on and do other wonderful things.
Which you did. I mean, you didn't have another series like that, but you did certainly a whole bunch more performing and acting on...
Thing is, I want to make this clear, that I knew that the girls by this time were so strong and the audience, the TV audience, loved them so much that, in other words, if I left the show, the cameramen and all the people involved with the production, nobody was going to lose their job. You know, they wanted me to stay for 2 more years. And they offered me millions.
Good Lord. You turned down millions?
Well, yes. I mean, I didn't want to go on just saying, come on, girls, let's... And, you know, some writers on other shows said, stay and get every nickel. And I just felt I would like to do... And I did. I did Driving Miss Daisy after that and all sorts of wonderful things. A Beckett play...
Well, you said your favorite character of all time was Winnie in Happy Days, yes?
Yes. A noble soul, just wonderful. Oh, yes, and I wouldn't probably have been able to do it. I don't know. It's just, and you know, I'm going to do something in the spring at the Center Music Group.
In Los Angeles, yeah.
Yes, it's at the Kirk Douglas Theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's another Beckett play. It's called Endgame.
Oh my! Wait, are you going to be in the garbage can?
Yes.
Good Lord! Wow! Is it a reading or a full staging?
It's a full staging.
Who's going to be your Nell? Who's Nag? Do you know yet?
Nick Crucci, but Alan Mandel is going to do the guy who walks around, and the other guy is, they're bringing in Barry McGovern.
Oh, wow.
From England, who just last year, or the year before, did Waiting for Godot with Alan Mandel, the two of them. And it was wonderful. Yeah, that's how I'm going to, if God wants it, I'll be celebrating my 90th birthday in an ash can.
Well, a lot of people end up celebrating their 90th birthdays in an ash can, but in the real way, at least you're on stage. That'll be wonderful.
Yeah.
Halavai. And by the way, everybody saw you just a few months ago in the movies opposite Meryl Streep and Kevin Klein, no less, in Ricky and the Flash, a Jonathan Demme film. So that's, I mean, you're still out there. Do you have any Meryl or Kevin stories?
Oh, golly. Well, for one thing, Meryl Streep is one of us. She's not someone who is very into herself and in a huge Winnebago and Stella Star. She's one of the gang, you know what I mean?
Hmm? Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes, of course.
And then Kevin Kline, he's a very funny, witty guy. I had a lot of fun with him. And Audra McDonald was in it, too. She had an interesting part.
Oh, that right. She was the new wife, right?
Yes. And she's a wonderful, remarkable woman. Remarkable. Did you see her? Where do you live?
Well, I mostly stay in Colorado these days, but I see some Broadway things. So,
the Lady
Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. She was the Billie Holiday show a couple of years ago.
Did you see her?
Yeah, she was terrific. She was amazing.
She was amazing. Amazing.
Although, I would personally prefer to see Billie Jewish Holiday. That would make my day. I would love a show called Billie Jewish Holiday. That's a joke right there.
Okay.
Feel free not to laugh. Okay. So,
I can see that you're passionate about the theater.
I am. It's my thing. Even a little bit more than television, or the movies. But speaking of the theater, okay, so it's 1973. Your last Broadway credit to date was the David Rabe play, the Boom Boom Room. I know you moved to California after that, but really, you never felt the siren call ever to go back to Broadway in the past 40 years?
No, well, I mean, I did.
You did some off-Broadway.
No, at the Mark Taper, I did Happy Days, the Beckett play.
Right.
And then they took me to New York to CSC, the Rep.
Yes.
13th Street, to do it there. I did it there for a couple of months, or 2 or 3 months. What else have I done?
Well, you did the Vagina Monologues off Broadway. You were one of the rotating cast people.
Jane Atkinson and what's her name? Oh, terrific! The other one, they're both terrific women. I forgot her name. Shoot. Anyway, yeah, that was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. What else? Oh, you've looked me up.
A bit. You know, I did a little the Googling, the Internet Broadway Database kind of thing, and just to get my ducks in a row. I'm just wondering why it has been so many years that you ever did Broadway again, you know, since 1973. Since, you know, at a certain point you could have gone on a plane very easily or done, you know, 3 or 6 months in New York in a show.
I did 70 Girls 70.
Oh, yeah.
I did it first in New York at the York Theater, and then I came back and did Plain and Fancy there.
Oh, wow.
And then I did a few years back at, and then at El Portel, I did 70 Girls 70. I played the lead.
Oh, my.
Ida. And then a couple of years ago at City Center on 55th Street in New York, Encore.
Yes, the Encores. It's sort of musicals and mufti kind of a thing. Yeah, yeah.
I did 70 Girls 70. I did a number with Mark Harris called Go Visit Your Grandmother from 70 Girls 70.
Mark Harris or Sam Harris?
No, not Sam.
Oh, okay.
Mark, I forget his last name. I think it's Harris. He was adorable. He's a dancer. And I sang Go Visit Your Grandmother, and it stopped the show. Just stopped it. Cold.
I believe it. Can I ask, some of your very, very favorite people over the years that you have worked with?
Well, oh, God. Larry Hagman and, oh, golly, Angela Lansbury. I was in a show with her that closed in Boston.
What show was that?
Pretty Belle.
Oh, my God. That was Jerry Herman, wasn't it?
No.
No? Oh, whoops.
Julie
my fault.
Julie Stein,
right. Okay.
But Merrill.
The late Bob Merrill, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Pretty Belle. Oh, my God. So that's another one where you probably thought when you first started rehearsals, oh, this will be on Broadway, it'll be a hit, and then just nothing.
Right. Yeah. I love working with Angela. And then later on, we worked on her show, Murder, She Wrote. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, everybody loves Angela Lansbury. Of course you love Angela Lansbury.
She's 90, you know, yeah.
Well, yeah, and she's going strong. She's still doing all these things.
She is, and Cicely Tyson is 92.
Right, and she was just on Broadway, or she is right now in The Gin Game.
That's right.
Wow. It's just amazing to be talking to the delightful Charlotte Ray. I want to remind people one more time, you got to get her book, The Facts of My Life. It's all out there. The good times, the bad times, all the times in between. You can get it from Bear Manor Media. So I guess my last question for you, besides thanking you so much for being in the neighborhood, is your hopes leading to your millennium, the next 10 years. What do you hope?
I hope for peace in the world.
Good luck. Ain't gonna happen. Hope for something else.
Oh, well.
For you, for your family.
That I can continue to spread joy all over the place with my work and be with my family and my friends and filled with the love that I have for them and for life.
It doesn't get better than that. You can't even put it better than that. Charlotte Ray, it has been a delight talking to you. I can only wish you much more health. I hope you outlive your current pacemaker, and they're putting five more over the years. And you live to 200. You should. So, thank you, bless you, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, and happy holidays for you.
You too. You too. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Hanukkah. Festivus too. Throw them all in there. And shalom to you.
Thank you. God bless you.